Hello, my name is John Smetanka, and the name of our program is With Respect. Today's guest on With Respect is Al Pasholka. Al has been a guest on our program some time ago, and so we know a lot about his background, but I want to talk today about business and about politics and government. But his expertise is he is the Vice President for Marketing and Governmental Affairs for Michigan Works. We're going to be talking about what that program is all about. But also he was in politics himself as a state representative and did that for a number of years and learned a lot of lessons, which I hope he shares with us. So, Al Pasholka, With Respect. So, Al, how are you today?
Great, John. It was great to bump into you, and always look forward to our conversations on a number of different issues.
Well, you know, it's been my treat also, because when I talk to you about whether it's politics or business, I find that you're able to, you're knowledgeable, and you can compress and distill and analyze information that a dodo like me can digest and understand. So, we've already talked about your background in great depth, where you went to grammar school and kindergarten in the last show, but I'm more interested now, summarizing, you had a media background before you got started, and then you moved on to be a state representative.
Yeah.
And tell me about that.
An interesting career, and when you talk to kids now about their careers and what they can look forward to, is you generally hear, hey, you may be involved in 3 to 4 different careers inside your life. And I started in broadcasting right out of high school and got involved in media, got to the point where we actually owned a group of radio stations, sold them in the early 90s. And then I got very involved in the community, very involved in economic development, worked at Cornerstone Alliance for 8 or 9 years and really enjoyed that work. And Congressman Upton came to me out of the blue and said, I need someone to run my district offices in Kalamazoo and St. Joseph. And my initial reaction was, well, no, I don't want to work for the government. And Fred was, and you know Fred. Fred can be rather persuasive. And we had another meeting, and I decided to take that position and worked, really enjoyed it, enjoyed the job tremendously, got to be involved in a number of different federal, state, and local issues, ran for office myself as a township trustee, and then eventually ran for state representative. And as I was terming out, Governor Snyder walked into the office and said, how would you like to be the state budget director? Now, this is from a guy who never had a college math class, and now I'm managing a $61 billion state budget and put together the governor's last two budgets before he was termed out of office, and then really came back home and wanted to get into this whole notion of workforce, what the future workforce would look like. Conexus Group has a Michigan Works office, has another program called Youth Solutions, which is jobs for Michigan's graduates, has an economic development arm called Market Van Buren, and also we started a trade association called the Manufacturing Growth Alliance that assists manufacturers of 150 employees or less. So really this whole notion of economy, jobs, workforce, how do they fit together? And it's been a fascinating 4.5 years as we look at a number of issues. And as you and I talked about just previously to going on the air, is we've got significant demographic issues facing our country. And we've gone from really a pandemic to what I would call a sans-demic. We're in a time without people. We've got more job openings than we've got individuals. We kind of knew this was coming because baby boomers did not create enough children to replace themselves in the workplace. And
now,
so
let's stop right there.
Yeah.
I have heard about that phenomenon. In my parents' generation, each of my parents came from, my dad came from one of five children. My mother was one of eight. In the next generation, I think the largest number was three. In our family, it was two, my brother and I. And in some families, none, zero. Some of the generation, the cousins and brothers and sisters of my parents' generation, zero. Now, what, you're right, we haven't produced enough people to fill our parents' place, or now even our place, as a number of us go into retirement or modified retirement. So we're, well, look, why are we worried about the number of workers and filling jobs in an economy that I'm sure a lot of people don't understand? So could you take a couple of minutes and talk about what different kinds of organizing ourselves that human beings on the earth have done? And there's a wide range, but we can break them down into some, you know, some understandable categories. Well, then we'll break it down a little bit further. But something that Joe and Sally, who are like me, without much of an economic education, can understand.
Yeah, well, of course, this country has always been based on capitalism, which is people willing to invest their own capital to create goods and services,
okay,
to create products.
No.
Yes.
You used a big word there, capital. What are you talking about, capital?
Capital, money. Investing.
Money?
Well, not only money, but time, talent, resources to build the goods and services to serve society. And in capitalism, you create profits, and with profits, you create more opportunities for more individuals, more labor, per se, to come into that particular organization. So in our case, and as you see in Southwest Michigan, we have a number. Now this is, and I just learned this week, 75% of the enterprises in Southwest Michigan are 10 employees or less.
Mm.
So think about the small businesses that are in not only Harbor Country, but across Berrien, Cass, Van Buren County. Most of these enterprises are small businesses where people have said, I want to take a risk, I want to invest, and I want to provide a good or service for my community or my market and earn a profit, earn a living from that, and have my employees also earn a good living from that. As opposed to what socialism might be, is more central planning, more of the government deciding who's going to provide which good and service and deciding how much that good or service is worth.
All right, you said something interesting, which is 75% of our businesses are people who are groups who are enterprises who generate goods and services here in Berrien County. And we're using Berrien County because it's easy for us to focus in numbers, but we're going to talk also about how we spread this out over the rest of the state and the rest of the country. But coming back now, but there's 25% who are hiring or using more than 10 employees. What kind of businesses do those entail?
Generally, and if you look at our economy in Southwest Michigan, we have three main drivers. Still, the most important driver is manufacturing. Manufacturing still employs about 18% of the folks in Southwest Michigan. Right behind that is healthcare, and right in between that is leisure and hospitality. So leisure and hospitality, healthcare, and manufacturing are really the three big sectors that drive our economy. Government is also a big employer, so that's another driver of the economy. So those are probably the four largest sectors that we have, manufacturing being probably still the most important in terms of sales and overall employment, healthcare right behind it, leisure and hospitality, and government. If you look at those four sectors, they'll make up about 80% of the jobs or where people will work.
Manufacturers, might as well be specific, or healthcare services. What are we talking about specifically? What companies?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at healthcare and in our area, Spectrum Health Lakeland, obviously the largest employer in Berrien County, more than 4,600 people. But right now they're in a position where they have 600 openings. They have 600 openings at just that one facility. But we've also got other services, whether they're doctors, physical therapy, all the different medical professions, that adds up to about another 3,600 people work in that sector of healthcare. So lots of openings, lots of job possibilities. And if you look at leisure and hospitality, that's the sector that has suffered the most coming out of the pandemic. Still has not recovered from where they were previously. And you've seen a number of smaller businesses actually go out of business because they cannot find labor, or the supply chain has hit them so severely that they haven't been able to stay in business.
You've talked about the magic word pandemic, mm-hmm. which has affected everybody's life. It's affected the court system that I deal with. It's
right.
affected businesses. It's affected labor. It's affected health. It's affected not just the health providers, but it's also affected people,
right?
And you know, deaths and serious injuries, serious health results, and long COVID and short COVID, and all this is. We have just been inundated with the effects of this pandemic and the responses that we went through. For example, shutting down essentially most of the economy for a period of time. What effect do you see, and do you see us coming out of that?
Yeah, it's really impacted the size of the labor market. Demographically, we were already having some issues being a little bit smaller and a little bit older than the rest of the country, and our educational attainment is a little bit behind in Berrien, Cass, Van Buren compared to the rest of the state. So one of the things we did at Connexus, John, early on in this pandemic is we really started to dig in deeper to the labor market information that we have. We have about 40 different sources that we can look at. And if folks are familiar with the JOLTS hiring thing or EMSI, and we take all of this and kind of boil it into a monthly report. So if we look, it got really interesting during the pandemic. And the media started taking a little more note of it. So we started to have monthly roundtables trying to explain not only to the media, but I thought it would be really important to get our legislators involved and have a roundtable with them each month. Hey, look, this is what's happening with this particular policy. This is the impact you're having on the labor market of whether people are coming back to work, whether they're leaving and not coming back. So if we look at where we were that dreadful time in March 2020, when we decided to lock down the economy, and you look at those numbers compared to where we are today, here's the latest information. In manufacturing in Southwest Michigan, we are still down 9.3% in the total number of people employed. That's 1,700 people. In healthcare, that number is about 800 people. We are 800 people fewer working in that sector compared to where we were in the start of the pandemic. And leisure and hospitality has been the one that has really suffered the most. They are still down. I want to give you a real accurate number here because it's astounding, the percentage. 18%. Whoa. There's 18% fewer people working in leisure and hospitality. 2,045 jobs in the Tri-County area, smaller than where we were on March 2020. So a lot of folks like to talk about the unemployment rate. What we like to talk about at Connexus is the size of the labor market.
All right, now let's stop right there. And please, if you do it briefly, because we're coming up to a break,
yep.
If you could explain the difference between those two phrases.
Yeah, it really gets to the labor market participation. And that's where we've seen a really drop off. Labor market participation is down. And with the unemployment rate, the government quits counting you after about 6 weeks. Once you're out of the labor market, they quit counting you. So that unemployment rate number might be 4%, but we know the labor market size is down probably 15,000 people in the last 10 years. That's the number that we really got to focus on in order to have a really growing economy.
Well, does that mean, well, let's take a break right now, because they're going to segue into something else which I'm interested in, and I think very relevant to this concept of the labor market. This is John Smetanka, Ron, with respect, and we're talking to Al Pasholka, former legislator, sportscaster.
Still sportscaster,
yeah. But seriously, works with Michigan Works, working on jobs and the health of our local economy. And when I say our local economy, as my listeners know around the country and around the world, a lot of these same things apply everywhere.
Yep.
We'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Al Pasholka, who is the Vice President of Marketing and Governmental Affairs for Michigan Works. And we've been talking about, just a wide range of things. Sometimes, and this is why I like talking to Al, because he can break it down into simple terms, because the basic issues we're talking about are really complex. And there's people who make a living out of just trying to define these numbers.
Yeah.
And all right, so this is John Smetanka, and with respect, I'm going to take a sideline here. I was studying after law school for a degree in taxation, and because of my background, I had to go back and take an additional course in statistics. And the course was taught by an econometrician, which meant a person who uses mathematics to meter and to understand economics. The problem was I had no calculus in my background at all. And so this poor fellow, young man, lovely, just great fellow, charming, had a class full of people like me who hadn't the slightest idea what he was talking about because he was talking numbers and sines and cosines and letters and all kinds of stuff. But it's complicated, very complicated. Simplify the whole thing out.
Yeah, so really, I mean, friends of mine that we get together and have these conversations too, and it's really about creating an ecosystem, right? I mean, it's not just one thing that's impacting everything that we're seeing in the labor market right now. And one interesting statistic I shared with you, if you go back to the 1980s, young men started dropping out of the labor market. In that key demographic of 25 to 54, we started to see less men and men working. The labor participation rate went from 93%. Now it's down into the high 80s. What happened to these young men? As you dig into it, you find out some of them are in the gig economy. Some of them are...
Whoa. The gig economy?
Yep. They could be musicians. They could be doing their own thing on the side, doing lots of different things, working for themselves. They could be in mom and dad's basement. And the other interesting statistic, we lost 900,000 of them to opioid addiction. That
lost
they just
them.
Lost
mean?
Them. They died.
900,000
we lost to opioids. So right before the pandemic, if you look at the United States workforce, was 52% female, 48% male. So that was a big shift from the 80s and 90s. So, and as the pandemic hit, boy, now you had some other issues, right? Would all of the women come back to work right away now that you've got school issues, right? Schools are closed. You've got daycare problems. You've got all of these other issues Would all of them come back? Not all of them have.
But when you said 52 and 48, that's not too far off from the percentage of men and women in the population generally.
That's right. That's exactly
right. So
there's
a balance at that
point. Right.
Not,
that's
we're not
exactly
talking
right.
about the same kinds of jobs, but at least the percentages.
Right.
All right. So you've listed a whole slug of things that I've heard people talking about for years now, 2 years. Are people, young people especially, too lazy to get a job? They're riding on government grants? Or are we talking about, you talked about, for example, daycare. Did virtual learning where the schools were closed have any effect? I mean, I've talked to parent after parent after parent and kid after kid after kid that bemoan the emphasis on computer education in the home because they said it just didn't work. Now, my only child is way past that, but she has children, my grandchildren,
right.
and so on. That where is this a commentary on the interest in work that our people as a whole have, or is it a bleep in the population, a burp, as it were, in the population growth and continuance?
Yeah, I think a lot of young people, the expectations are a little bit different than when you and I were growing up, right? Mm-hmm. And we've noticed this with young people that we've tried to hire at Conexus and other places is they do really come in with a higher expectation that they want to be the vice president. Well, now, wait a second. There's ways to get to that pathway. And I think what we haven't done a very good job of is introducing this whole notion of career pathways to people, that there are ladders inside companies and organizations in order for you to work your way up the ladder. So if we go back just briefly on leisure and hospitality, a lot of those positions are not there to be career positions. Some of them are. Some folks stay in the leisure and hospitality, work their way up to management, maybe own their own restaurant or business eventually. But really, those were designed, and I think my first job was cooking at Big Boy. I had no desire to be in the restaurant business, but I did learn things like communication, teamwork, certain job skills, soft skills that I would carry with me the rest of my life. But the expectation is I was going to do something different. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we've lost some of that along the way, but it does impact our whole ecosystem of whether it's schools, jobs, opportunities that are out there. These expectations are really bumping into them heavily, and you throw technology into the mix as well. And we've created kind of this strange brew of how do we build a talent pipeline for individual companies. Now, you will find some have said, hey, we're going to change, and we're going to be a little bit more flexible. We're going to offer a little bit more benefits. Maybe it's a little bit more money. But what we've found with a lot of the younger generation, it's not about the salary, but it is about the time off. It is about, hey, I don't want to work shift work. Hey, I don't want to work at night. So if you've noticed it, I know I've noticed it. Now a lot of fast food places are drive-through only. The hours have changed. Mm-hmm. And this is a reflection of the workforce and what's out there and what folks are willing to do.
All right. There's not enough bodies.
Right.
I got that. But where do we get the bodies? I mean, seriously, I've seen many, many friends who are in business. I've seen places where clients of mine who have these questions that they're bouncing around with each other and with me. Where do we go? And I remember somewhere an issue with immigration mm-hmm. that came up way before the 80s. I would see large numbers of immigrants coming in, legally or illegally.
Right.
But now it seems to, at least if you watch some of the media, it's exploded. Does that help to replace the workforce?
It can. It could be part of the solution. Part of the solution can be legal immigration, folks coming in that we need in particular industries in our economy. Absolutely, we need to attract those folks. We have traditionally throughout the history of the country. I think where people get off the rails a little bit is when they start to see high levels of illegal immigration and not enforcing the laws on the border. But we do need more people. I mean, that's clear. We need to take the folks that we have here and making sure that they have the right skills for the jobs and the opportunities that are being created. All right. So some reskilling, some upskilling, some immigration. There are some solutions out there.
Well, take those two phrases, two words, reskilling and upskilling. We already talked about immigration, but what about the...
I have a legal issue I want to share with you, too.
All right, well, let me just try the skilling part.
Yeah.
So what about, what do you mean by those things, those concepts, upskilling and reskilling?
Yeah, taking folks that may have been at a certain place in the workforce and either left the workforce, no longer in the workforce, getting their skills up, reskilling them, whether it's through short-term training. Governor Snyder was always a big fan of, hey, you don't have to have a degree, but you have to have skills. So you've got to have certifications, badges, proof that you can do certain things. Are there short-term ways of doing that? Community colleges are actually great at that particular part, probably much better than colleges and universities. Our community colleges are a little more flexible. They can fashion training programs of 6 months, a month, maybe, or even an associate's degree to fill some of those needs. The legal issue I was going to bring up to you is in Southwest Michigan, we have a program called Offender Success, where we're dealing with felons coming out of the Michigan prison system and then providing them the wraparound services and the training, everything from mental health, substance abuse assistance, housing, tools, whether it's boots or whatever, providing them those services, making sure that we start to do that process while they're still behind the walls of the prison, because 95% of Michigan prisoners will come back to the community, 5% die in prison, that those 95%, what can we put them in the best possible position to be successful? We have the number one program in Southwest in Michigan doing that, serving an 8-county area. The other issue is expungement. That was something we tried to pass in the legislature, couldn't get the votes to do. And I'll give you just an anecdotal story. I was having my office hours, coffee hours, and woman shows up with her daughter from Benton Harbor. She had gone to Southwestern Michigan College, got her nursing degree, but had a felony and a misdemeanor on her record, and she could not be employed in healthcare. So without expunging her record, she had just taken on some student debt to go through the community college to earn a nursing degree, but it was not employable. And that's another avenue that the state has taken. Michigan Works has a program called Project Clean Slate. We work with an attorney out of Grand Rapids, and we start the process of getting folks through expungement so that they can be part of this talent pipeline that we have to build.
Expungement, by the way, means taking away the record of a person's conviction for some crime, right?
Right.
All right.
And I think, if I've got the statute right, this isn't, if you've got several felonies or lots of violent offenses, you're not eligible.
Right, right.
I believe it's one misdemeanor and one felony can be expunged off your record. I think there's a 7-year gap that has to take place as well.
Well, it is very complicated. Yeah. And among lawyers, we are putting together seminars for lawyers to understand this expungement process. Al, you have sketched problems we have in our economy. You've talked about we don't have enough people working. We can't find them so far. Or if we can find them, we don't have the training, the skills for a current economy. And then there's some out there that we know are out there and do want to work, but they have burdens that they carry, such as being
barriers to employment.
Barriers to employment, records, criminal records and whatnot. And the question is legal or illegal immigration. I will tell you, I know of people, businesses who have hired illegals, and they say they're the best workers I have. They're loyal, and they, for whatever reason, they're working hard. All of these things factor into how our economy works and whether or not we can get the goods and services that we need or want for the future, right?
Yeah, and we haven't even talked about two of the major barriers are really transportation and daycare. I mean, those are probably the two biggest barriers that are out there. And in a rural county, how do we do a better job with public transportation and actually getting folks to work? And I know you're familiar with the whole Alice population, right? That folks are, the working poor are a flat tire away from not being able to get down. And we've created at Michigan Works another program called the Business Resource Network, where we've got employers and we bring in a success coach to work with folks at their site to work around some of these issues. I'll give you, for instance, there was an employer down here in South County that they were loaning money to their employees to help them with short-term issues, and a woman came and said, I need a new transmission. Well, that's $1,500. That's above the amount that the employer wanted to give. However, that one person drove four other people to the plant, too. So now the employer would lose five people off that shift unless they could solve that barrier. So we have success coaches and folks that work inside those businesses that help employers identify what those issues are, try to solve those issues so that we can have better retention. So it's not only attraction, but it's retention of the workforce that you already have and breaking down those barriers and eliminating them. And the big two that come to the top of my mind, of course, are transportation and daycare.
We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to be talking more about one of those, the daycare issue, and a bunch of other things that we need to chat about today. So, this is John Smetanka, Run With Respect, and our guest today is Al Pashoka, who is the Vice President of Marketing and Governmental Affairs for Michigan Works, and he's talked all about his businesses and those programs that are associated with it. This is John Smetanka. We'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with our guest, Al Pashoka, who is the Vice President for Marketing and Governmental Affairs for Michigan Works. And this is John Smetanka. So, Al, when we broke, you raised the issue of child care. Look, we've talked about COVID. We've talked about declining birth rate. Mm-hmm. We've talked about job training and skills training. We have talked about transportation. All of them, opioids, immigration, all of this is a brew of things that we have to deal with in this ecosystem you're talking about of how we get goods and services to people. Let's talk briefly about the aspect of daycare, which is something that I'm quite familiar with. From talking to members of my family.
Yeah, and a big issue there, John, is as well finding enough daycare providers to deal with the market that we know is out there. Not only is it, it's kind of a supply and demand issue here. So we know we've got folks that need daycare services in order to go to work, in order to stay on the job. And then we've got to have daycare providers, right, are actually going to be providing these services, and do we have enough of them? Now you're seeing companies do some pretty creative things. If you're a big multinational like a Whirlpool Corporation, you can build your own preschool, which they have in Benton Township. They've got daycare and preschool right on site that employees take advantage of. Same thing with some of the other larger employers that are out there. But if you're a small business or a small company, same issue as daycare. That is a huge issue that we have not solved.
All right. Now I'm going to put another hat for you. There's one group that we haven't yet talked about very much, and that is that group of bodies and people and rules and regulations called government. And government in our society, the way we run things, has increasingly had a greater role in shaping how the economy works or doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You were in government. You saw how laws were making it. And you want to quote the old phrase, those who want to appreciate the law, and what was it? Law and something else should not watch it be made.
Sausage making.
Look, tell all of us about what is the role of government? What is the proper role? Is there a bad role, a bad effect of government work? What is it? Tell me.
You know, I think a proper role of government is really to create the environment where businesses and people can be successful. So coming up with those left and right guideposts, those guardrails, to make sure that there's some fairness, you do need some regulation. I'm not one of these guys that says, hey, we laissez-faire, no rules, no regulations. That's just not reasonable, not in a modern society. But do we have to have so many prescriptive rules and regulations? I'm kind of more somewhere in the middle, where government needs to create an environment where people can be successful. And I do think, John, there is a lot of gray area in there, and it depends on the particular issue. We had this come up in Michigan in 2010, 2011. We had all of these large incentive programs where we were handing out billions of dollars, primarily to the big three automakers. Please stay here, please. What's happened? Well, what's happened is we had 95,000 people employed by the big three, and today we got 50,000. So
in Michigan,
yeah, just didn't work. And now we've got all these auto plants that are more than 50 years old, and people are familiar with what's happening in the auto industry. But the whole notion of when Governor Snyder came in is he wanted to create this, what was called economic gardening, that we start to grow our own and we start to have regions of the state where we know things might be a little bit different. If you look at, the Kalamazoo region is big in life sciences. An area down here that I think we're missing the boat on a little bit is this whole notion of scientific and analytical equipment that we have at companies like LECO and another company in Mattawan called Charles River, big into science. How do we grow those types of initiatives? And it's not just, hey, we're going to give you a big tax credit to go do this or to go do that. What we've tried to do as well is incentivize training, which I think is smart. So that's more of a demand-driven. If a company is going to be hiring, is there a way that the government can play a role to assist in the training and development of those individuals to help the company? That's more of an economic gardening rather than saying, hey, here's a big check, go attract a big company. Are there ways that we can incentivize training, development, making sure that we're creating a talent pipeline that makes Michigan an attractive place to make that investment?
In my time in government, which was a bunch of years, 25 years in government, one of the things that I noticed was that too often there was someone had an idea, we need to have better education, and so we just sign a check.
Yeah.
We just print the money, and it goes to the various educational institutions that we favor at this particular time, whether it's primary schools for, preschool education, and then it goes to colleges and universities and research facilities, and you just write a check and say, hey, we've done our job. And yet the money is trashed in many respects. It's not properly used. And there's and there is a period of time, and I've had this experience, where we put together a criminal case against a particular individual, a group of individuals for defrauding the government. And I remember going to one federal agent when I was a county prosecutor, and I said, but here you've got this problem. It's a crime. What's happening here? What are you going to do about it? And he said, John, you're a nice young man. I was young then. Now, I want to tell you something, son. There are times when we throw the money out, just get it out, and no one cares, because they want it into the system. They want it into the economy. And other times later on, then we'll come along and be more investigatory and prosecutorial.
Accountable. There's that word.
But the two don't often enough go hand in hand. Yeah. I don't know what your experience has been.
Yeah. No, I my experience in state government was, and I think I went in there with the mindset of, hey, is there a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse? I didn't find it. I didn't find a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse in a lot of programs. I did find at times maybe our priorities weren't being funded, right? So, especially being an appropriations guy who worked on the budget, I wanted to see, you know, maybe be change some of those priorities to make sure that the funding would make the state more competitive. And we do have, especially in the Republican caucus, there was always a big battle over higher education. I had many of my colleagues, all of them who went to college, but didn't want to fund it. Mm. And my position was a little bit different because, you know, if you want to really impact tuition, you are going to have the state invest a little bit more money in order for the college and university to keep a lid on tuition. If I give Western Michigan University less money, guess where they're going to get it from? They're going to get it from the student and the student's family. And when I started in college, it was 75% funded by the state, 25% funded by tuition. Today, it's 25% funded by the state, 75% funded by tuition.
Whoa, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You've talked now about, you said some of your Republican colleagues. All right. I'm not going to ask you to name names, but I am going to raise something which you and I have discussed over the years, and that is the increasing difficulty of getting people in politics and around politics to play it straight. And by that I mean, they go in with the idea, I hope, that they're going to improve America, improve Michigan, improve their legislative or congressional district.
Yep.
And they get into niff-gnawing with each other.
Wedge issues.
And then it turns into brutality.
Yep.
And I'm seeing much, much more of, especially through the media, but not only through the media, through the internet, and politics of massacre is what I see going on.
So in my farewell speech, we give farewell speeches after 6 years, and you termed out pretty quickly, but in my farewell speech, I said this, to my friends on the far left and my friends on the far right, you're both wrong. And I've watched over the years, people have caught on to that, and they said, I remember when Al Pasholka said, and they've used it on Facebook. I had the good fortune to pass 64 public acts, which was more than any other legislator in that six-year period, and it was because I was willing to work with folks on the other side. I was a leading proponent for Medicaid expansion. Now I took a beating from the Tea Party and some other folks on the right for getting involved in Medicaid expansion, but I looked at Berrien County and 13,000 people now have health care and access to health care because we passed Medicaid expansion. That's good for the businesses. That's good for the communities down here. And it's good for individuals. And I'll never forget, after we passed the bill, I always published my home number. I had a young lady call me, and she said, "I just want to thank you for working on Medicaid expansion." And she said, "I have two children, divorced, didn't have access to health care, husband's gone, and I... because of what you put in the law that said everybody had to have a physical within the first 90 days to qualify for Medicaid expansion, they discovered a lump on her breast and it saved her life." Now, how much is that worth? And how many of those stories are out there? But I had folks spray painting, calling it Pashulka Care. Obamacare equals Pashulka Care, and went after me. And I've had recall attempts and primaries from my right side, but in the end, was it the right thing to do? You're damn right it was.
That's an interesting phrase, the right thing to do. We're going to talk more about that and the obligation of the public as well as politicians when we come back, but right now we're going to take a break. We're talking to Al Pashulka here on With Respect. He is the Vice President for Marketing and Governmental Affairs for Michigan Works, which tries to bring re-education, education, more jobs for everybody in our area. This is John Smetanka with Respect. We'll be right back. We're now back on With Respect with Al Pashulka of Michigan Works. This is John Smetanka. Al, when we broke, you said something, the right thing to do. Now, I've been in politics for a long time, in and out of it, and just right now I'm out of it. I'm just, I'm a recovering politician.
But, me too.
but as one not so old, broken down politician to another, all right. I accept that I don't know everything from my point of view. I really do. And I'm open to be re-educated about right. somebody else's position.
Right.
I don't, however, learn from people shouting and screaming at me, taking school boards or city councils or congressional meetings, at-home meetings or whatever, and taking it, turning them into shout fests, or more than that. Shouting is one thing, but physical violence is something else, on both sides, whether it's the mm-hmm. management or the participants in the school. So, how do we change the atmosphere from where we're at right now, which is really hostile? And we're coming up at this time to midterm elections, but this could be a presidential election, whatever it is. Is there a way that we can get the public to look at both sides, to evaluate people on their performance, accountability, ideas, without turning this into, as I said before, assassination by internet or massacres or whatever? What do you think?
Yeah, it really comes down to, I think, two big things that we haven't been able to solve, and that's leadership and trust. Leadership and trust is so vitally important. And when I was first elected, we had a speaker who was somebody who we allowed for debate. We allowed for amendments. You got to have that open discourse and dialogue. And I think that made better law during the course of those years. So it was less ideological. Now, I've noticed, and term limits play into this in Michigan, too, because folks are generally, this is their first job or their last job. and things have gotten a little more divisive, and it's all about loyalty to your own caucus, not about solving the bigger problem. And this whole notion of civility and having civil discourse. And I'll use another quick story if I've got time. I passed a bill on opioids, and it came from my district. I had a young man from Waterville-Ete who went to a party on New Year's, went to what's called a Skittles party, where they threw a bunch of pills into a hat, and they take them, and they drink alcohol. The young man had a seizure. Nobody called for help, because they were afraid they were going to get in trouble. But we do have something called the Good Samaritan Law in Michigan, and the more I researched it, and I wanted to change it. And my first change was, if you're under 21 and it's a prescription drugs or an opioid, you won't face prosecution if you pick up the phone and call for help. And I took it to my Democratic colleagues, and Sam Singh, gentleman from East Lansing, diametrically different from me politically, said, "Al, this is a really good idea, but you know it doesn't go far enough, right?" And I said, "Sam, if I win re-election and you win re-election," I said, "we'll come back in our third term, and yes, we'll fix it, and we'll make it all substances, all ages." It took me 10 months, though, to pass the bill, because law enforcement wasn't quite in favor. And it took a while to get law enforcement there. Then all of a sudden, when they started using Narcan and they're saving lives out in the field, when Sam got reelected and Al Pashoka got reelected, we went back and we changed the Good Samaritan Law again. And we've literally saved countless lives by making that change and making it okay for you to pick up the phone and call for help. As long as there's no other crime being committed, call for help. To help somebody.
So, you're talking about very pragmatic, day-to-day issues.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've been watching over the years is, and where it comes from, I'll just say it was Watergate or something before then, and that is different generations come into the legislative, the judicial, the executive, the governmental world, and this may sound awful, but they did not come in with the same flexibility you're talking about. They came in at a moral point. I cannot change.
My ideology says I cannot do this.
Yeah. And I can't do this.
Yeah.
And they consider it a matter of faith and morals.
Yeah.
That they stick with their whatever position that they see.
But they won't be successful legislators.
Well, of course not.
Right.
And that's why we have deadlocks in legislatures, in my view. So everybody now is coming in with I'm for this, and I will never change. You can trust me, because I am not polluted by the rest of those people in Lansing or Washington who want to compromise. Compromise is awful. It's dirty. There are 300 plus million people in this country. They do not all think alike. They have different experiences. They have different backgrounds. And my former father-in-law, bless his soul, I loved him very much and still miss him, Charlie Soller would say, "There's no such thing as the perfect law," because
we used to say that a lot. We said, "Hey, don't let great be the enemy of the good," right?
That's
so
right.
How do we get to yes? And there are ways, and I have lots of examples personally, where it's not you're bending your principles, and people get caught up on their ideology or their principles. It's finding, not compromise, common ground. Mm-hmm. Where is the common ground? Mm-hmm. Right? So when Sam said to me, "Look, this doesn't go far enough," that doesn't mean he was going to vote no on the original legislation. Mm-hmm. It means, hey, let's continue the dialogue and the conversation, because I think we can make it even better. And I said, "I agree. I just got to overcome all the ideology and the other stuff on my side to get us there." So the more that happens, and that's where elections really do matter. I mean, the folks that you're going to send to either, Lansing or Washington, do they have the mindset? Are they there to be problem solvers, to find solutions, or are they there to just to adhere to one strict principle? But in my view, you can have your principles, but yet still find common ground with the other side.
There are so many people who I have seen wrongfully destroyed. There are people in government that should be taken out of government. I've prosecuted judges. I have prosecuted cops. I've prosecuted lawyers. I've prosecuted government officials. It's not that I don't think they should be prosecuted. But just assassinating somebody because, appeared in a fundraiser with so-and-so, who I don't happen to like.
Right.
I mean, hello. You go through a fundraiser, and it's, you know, we used to call them grip and grins, and you have to you shake hands and have your picture taken.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, some people would consider just a shake hands in a cocktail party or a legislature to be a betrayal of values. Not necessarily true.
Yeah. No, not at all. Not if you're pragmatic and you're actually trying to get things done. And I noticed in some of the folks who got elected after me, the ones that started to understand that were the ones that became much better legislators. And they came in from maybe a pretty strict ideology that, you know, they were going to be very conservative. But then they found out, geez, I can't get a bill passed. I can't get anything done.
Even if I get elected and reelected and elected the fourth time or the 12th time, if you haven't accomplished anything, what is the value of that except occupying a seat in the legislature or in the governor's office or the whatever?
Yeah.
What we are not doing is, as I said to somebody the other day, we are all now the current phrase is silos. We're all in our own silos. And we don't want to hear what anybody else has to say. Our news source is fine. Their news source is evil. What we need is for people in all silos, all groups, to understand that they have to listen. I don't mean just hear. I don't mean close your ears and shout. I don't want to hear this. I want to understand where other people come from, what their problems are, what their ideas are. That's what we got to have to save this country.
Yeah. My minority vice chair when I was chairman of appropriations was a gentleman from Detroit by the name of Harvey Santana, who was Puerto Rican, lived on the west side of Detroit, and he would invite me to come and visit Detroit schools. Because we were working on the Detroit bankruptcy at the time. And he goes, Al, I want you to come and see it for yourself. And we've become best buddies. He comes out to Southwest Michigan. I go to Detroit. And he took me around to various schools and introduced me to the principals, to the teachers, to the kids, so that I had a better understanding that when we went back to do that legislation, that it made sense for that community. And those are the types of relationships that folks have to build, but it is based on some mutual trust, some respect, and having an open mind and being willing to listen. And I know my grandfather taught me leave things better than you found them. And that was kind of the attitude that I took to the legislature.
Well, none of this can happen without the public, the voters, paying attention to start with, and cutting through the acid that's dripping down the walls.
Don't be single issue. That's what I would say to folks. Yeah. Like, don't be a single issue person that hey, if you feel this way about one issue, I'm just going to exclude you. You're not going to be eligible to be elected. I mean, Ronald Reagan famously said 80%. If we agree on 80%, we're really good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be surprised at how many times you can find 80% on the other side.
It is It is a serious proposition now with our electoral world being so closely divided. And unfortunately, as I say, the shouting does not indicate wisdom. It doesn't. Stop and listen and think and talk to the other side. Because 90% of the people that I ran across in my campaigns and in my work as a prosecutor and as a lawyer, 90% of them, all different kinds of views, mm-hmm. are decent people. Mm-hmm. They're decent people. They have experiences which cause them to believe one way or the other on a particular issue. And you talk about individual cases where people called you up and said, look what that did for me. That was just wonderful. Very quickly, I prosecuted a guy for a delivery of heroin, and the next time I saw him after a long case, I was in a pharmacy, and he called me, "Hey, Shemtanka," you know. Uh-oh, this is, okay. So he said, "You put me away. It was the best thing that ever happened to me because I learned a trade while I was there, and now I'm working." Yep. Anyway, Al, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you and listening to you and trying to understand the world of politics, government, and business.
John, thank you.
The name of our program is With Respect. And remember, until next time, our mantra, if you show respect to other people, they will show respect to you.